Which way is up?
Max is that way, right? Okay, Max is up.
And then what's this wheel for?
This wheel is what tone? Low, high is this way.
Okay. We've been talking all the while. Okay, let's see what we got here.
This is Pat McCauley. I'm talking with Stan Weir at his home in San Pedro. It's March 3rd, 1991. Stan, I wanted to start this session talking a bit about your family. You mentioned you met your wife, Mary, at a dance when she was a student at Berkeley. What was she studying at Berkeley?
She was an English Lit major and a senior. Just about to graduate.
And tell us about meeting her.
Well, I was working, this is 1946, later 46. And I was working at Chevrolet in East Oakland, Chevrolet plant. It was the opening of the semester. This means this is September. It was late September sometime in 1946. And a friend of mine and I started wandering around campus the beginning of the semester looking for dances to crash,
yeah,
to meet women. And so we crashed the Masonic dance finally. The fraternity sorority set up didn't look good at all. It was too stiff.
Mm-hmm.
So we crashed this Masonic, walked right in. And the first woman I saw had a red dress and a gold belt on, it was Mary. I asked her to dance, and I danced the rest of the night with her. And I told her all about the Sailors Union and the 34th strike and all. I was really testing her. I didn't want to waste time. I was ready to get married.
Mm-hmm.
I was ready. And I didn't want to waste time with women who were anti-union and all. It turns out she's from West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
All her family, all the males are coal miners, and one of them was a shop steward who really had a big beef for lasted for years and all that. So when she graduated in January, or was it June, 47, when she graduated in June of 47, she moved in with me. But by the way, she took my Jeep. I had a brand new Army Jeep that I bought for $723 out of the crate.
Mm-hmm.
And she took all her girlfriends from the dorm where she lived down to witness the Oakland General Strike. And it was really an eye-opener for all of them. They really talked a lot about that, seriously. They'd never seen anything like it before in their lives. I had to get rid of that Jeep because Mary had bad sinuses, and God, it was going to kill her. I took her to Green Eye Hospital in San Francisco, and they operated on her and punctured both the septums so that the sinuses would really drain.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time in her life, she began to be cured of that condition. They had very good doctors at that Green Eye Hospital, Eye, Ear, Nose, and Throat Hospital,
mm-hmm,
San Francisco. But we lived together until April 47, and then got married. Ex-shipmate of mine, father was a judge, justice of the peace in Carmel. We went down there.
That's
double
right.
Robert Markinson, Bob Markinson, the leader of the Socialist Youth League, and myself and his girlfriend Manette, and Mary and I, we got married.
Mm-hmm.
Did Sailor's Union guy was best man too.
Mm-hmm. Carmel, that's a nice place to get married.
Yeah.
Did you bring up at the same time that did you bring up right away your socialism?
Yeah, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't waste any time.
Did she go to did she get involved with the Workers' Party?
Yeah.
The time?
They, without, as a surprise to me, they recruited her.
As a surprise to you?
Yeah,
they recruited her?
They recruited her.
Who, now, who was they?
The other party members, Gordon Haskell, and I forget all who it was. But he was the branch organizer.
And how did her family react to her living with you?
Well, they already, her mother and father were divorced since she was 8 or 9. And her father was paying her way through college, but he wasn't paying any attention to what was happening to her. But her mother visited us and stayed with us for a week or two, and it was all right. Her mother saw that this was a serious guy. I was really wanting to be a husband and a father.
Yeah. Now, her father was a coal miner, working coal miner.
No. All her uncles were on the mother's side of the family. Father's side of the family, they were tobacco farmers.
Mm.
And her father had become a traveling salesman. And that's where he met Mary's mother. He was from North Carolina, and he was on a sales route through West Virginia.
So so you married in 1947. What year was it that you moved back to Los Angeles?
1951.
Oh, so 1951. So you were years married. And she had gotten her degree from
Berkeley? She got her degree in June, I guess, of 47. We were living on 5th Street in the 1500 block. 1504 Fifth, I think it was. And we wanted to get a decent place to live. And I had a friend who was a machinist, waterfront machinist. His wife worked for the housing project, Codernices Village. It overlapped the Berkeley-Albany line. And it had been shipyard worker housing. There had been a jitney streetcar went right from the project right up to Richmond. And you couldn't get in unless you were a vet. And I wasn't a vet, merchant seaman would consider a vet, or unless you worked for the project. So Mary got a job for the nursing school in the project, and we got a place to live.
What was the name of the project?
Codornices. Codornices.
And she got a job as a nursery school teacher?
Yeah. Beginning nursery school.
Did that require her to have a teaching credential or anything?
No, it required her to have some experience. She got a job preliminarily with a private nursery school and then transferred over, got this job, which is public housing, and made a public employee of
it. Oh, it was a civil service?
Yeah, beginning civil service.
It wasn't a kind of sort of job where the workers were unionized or anything like that, was it?
Yes, they were union.
Mm-hmm.
But it was it wasn't in the private, but the public end of it, it was union.
What union was it?
I'm not sure now. I think it was SEIU.
Uh-huh. In the few years, then you moved in 1951 to Los Angeles and worked a variety of jobs. And in your story, it seems that you by the mid 50s you had acquired and lost quite a few jobs. What was Mary's reaction to this big, somewhat undependable nature of her married life at this point?
Well, it didn't affect her married life. We didn't have any children until 53. So it was just us. And I was never out of work for, more than a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was plenty of employment, and I was young, I had plenty of experience for the kind of jobs I was getting. Either as a bridge painter or high work painting high rises and buildings downtown, or as a cab driver in my career.
Early in L.A.?
No. in Berkeley from 1940, late 48 to late 49 for 1 year as a cab driver, and until 1951 I was a painter.
Mm-hmm. When you came to L.A., you had mentioned you had a couple of different jobs that were Teamster.
A lot of them. I was a... I was in the dairy workers, Teamsters segment, dairy employees. I was in the freight handlers, and the industrial laundry driver.
Mm-hmm. You never drove a cab in L.A.?
No. One other. I've been a member, I think, of six Teamster locals all told. I think it was four of them there, right in the first. We moved back to L.A. and moved to East L.A., right near Garfield High School. And the people were still there. I knew, you know, had plenty of buddies in there.
You moved into the old neighborhood, pretty
yeah.
much.
Yeah. And John Slevin, Malakan, Russian, I grew up with. He's the captain of our basketball team. He got me in the freight handlers. At that time, when was the Secretary of Treasury was Bonnie Volkoff, who was an infamous East L.A. guy. Hood, in a way. Strong man guy. But, and I was getting, the first day I came to the hiring hall, I was getting good jobs. Well, because of the, I knew the Malakans.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to him and I said, hey, I don't want a special treatment. I want to be just like everybody else, get my turn. I didn't get a job for 3.5 weeks. So I switched to, then I went to get a job at Brookfield Farms, which is a kosher dairy.
Mm. What about the freight handlers? Now, you go to the hiring hall, what kind of freight were you handling? Generally, where were they sending
General
you on a job?
Price. They would send me to Pacific Intermountain Express, PIE, or send me to all the big trucking companies, TransCon.
You never went down to the harbor and did
no.
any freight?
No, we would go down for a load, but
uh-huh.
we were really L.A. freight handlers.
Mm-hmm.
Swampers,
mm-hmm.
people who worked on the dock when they had that California freight, for example.
Did you load and unload the freight
trucks.
Anywhere? Trucks?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And you're involved in driving?
Sometimes, in a rush, they would hand me a semi that had a 24-foot box on it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even have a license for that at the time, but they'd take that chance.
And then you moved to a dairy?
Brookfield Farms in City Terrace. Which is just north of Boyle Heights.
And you were, what were you doing? Were you in there? Were you delivering milk?
No, I was inside now. I'd come in at midnight, run all the machines, the bottle washing machines and everything, and then when the drivers came at 3 a.m., I would put out their loads for them. We had nine loads. And in the morning, I would clean. The owner would come at 6 o'clock, and I would work till 8. And the last 2 hours I would spend cleaning all the stainless steel piping and machinery. You have to clean that stuff well. If there is half a drop of milk on stainless steel by 3 hours, that is a rainbow on that stainless steel, and you're caught. You've got to do a good job, or you're done deep.
Mm-hmm.
And the boss was an old IWW, Canadian One Big Union guy.
Hmm.
Class, Abe Class. Good guy. Then I got the job out of the union. And industrial laundry. And that's where I became head of the bargaining committee and chairman of the bargaining committee in Local 926 or 28, I forget which.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a, because of new blood coming in, showing up, and there was some know-how, there was a rebellion. That's how I got elected chairman of the bargaining committee, and that's how I got fired.
Mm-hmm.
And your strike, too. All that. And we've been over this before.
Yeah, we went up. We went through some of this. Yeah. Was Lori? Is Lori the firstborn?
No, Kim.
No? Or Kim?
And she was born 1953, right? So in the middle of this Teamster local fight for control of the local union.
And did her birth affect? Did that have an effect on your feeling that maybe you should have more a stable job, did that affect you and Mary in any way? Did you ever talk about becoming less political on a job?
No. That never came up,
mm-hmm.
ever.
Mm-hmm.
When I got fired at Welch's coverall, or overall, it was a terrible time for us. We had a young baby, and we were planning on another. And it was a terrible injustice. And I came home after being fired, and I went into like a state of partial paralysis, semi-catatonic, for about 2 hours. But the guys were very supportive. For the next 4 or 5 months, they paid my wages out of their pockets, threatening cash every week.
Mm-hmm. Well, we went over that also before earlier. I was wondering, you mentioned that you were planning to have another child, and in those days, did you plan to have children? Pretty much.
We had been trying for 4 years when we had Kim. So Mary had a tipped uterus, and they put what's known as a pessary. They gave her a pessary, a plastic brace to put inside, and it tipped the uterus into the proper position. We had a baby. She became pregnant within weeks of that. But we figured, while we have this thing working, let's have another one.
Yeah.
So when 22 months later, we had another child.
Mm-hmm. Where were you working at that time?
By 1955, in April, I was, I was working at Safeway stores as a grocery clerk.
I didn't know you were a grocery clerk.
Well, that was a hard one. I was a member of the retail clerks there, of course. And they had a good medical plan. Better than the Teamsters.
What local do you remember?
The big one, the Johnny St. Angelo, or Johnny, he was the head of the union for years.
Yeah, for years. I was in the retail person. Was it Tony? I was in the retail person in the 60s. That's later.
660.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. I was in it, I can't remember the name of it either, but anyhow, I wondered if...
But I went to my first meeting there, and they had a briefing for all of us who were going to be inducted. And they said, the first thing we started out with was, if you get in any trouble and there are charges against you, you'll be judged by your peers. And he didn't mean charges from the union, he meant charges from the employer. So already they were prepared with a disciplinary approach to employer problems. And it was pretty obvious they were going to be our disciplinarians.
Mm-hmm.
And I never knew many retail clerks who ever phoned the union with agreements. It was worked out in the store on the basis of powers that existed in the store.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty bad. It was the... I'd had a number of other jobs. Teamsters Union had been chasing me from job to job, getting me fired after 2 or 3 days. And I got that job, and I knew that the retail clerks and the Teamsters weren't getting along too well.
They were having a jurisdictional
squabble. Yeah, Teamsters were trying to raid them.
Yeah.
And in the Oakland General Strike, of course, Teamsters had fallen on their faces, and the retail clerks had done the best job. So that was successful for me. That is, Teamsters came, but Safeway was not intimidated, neither was the retail clerks. And so Laurie was born in Kaiser and Hollywood, the same place as well. Practically the same room, brand new hospital. It was very good. And it was after that, I hated that job. And that's when I kept my eye out, and when GM was hiring another ship, that's as I recall.
In Safeway, were you bagging groceries, stocking shelves, or
the whole
little of everything?
Not much at the cash register.
Yeah.
Mainly I had to be stocking shelves and receiving.
Where was the Safeway? Is it in your neighborhood?
Larchmont Safeway. That's in East Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
It was always Nat King Cole and his wife and his daughter lived a block away from there. They were the customers right there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was already changing there, but still Hollywood, real Hollywood, in 1950, late 54.
Mm-hmm. Los Angeles was, were you aware of the strict racial segregation in Los Angeles?
In some areas, yeah. I mean, my side of town had become solid Mexican-American. The Jewish community had moved from Boyle Heights to Fairfax,
okay.
And we're just beginning to go to the valley.
Was it unusual that Nat King Cole lived in Hollywood?
No, not at all.
Were there other blacks living in Hollywood?
Yeah, but they were, middle class people.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, we were working so much overtime, and it was such a hard job at the vehicles in the Pontiac, that we moved from Highland Park up on the hill there in Mount Washington to Compton into an apartment, two-bedroom apartment. And I could get the work in like 4 minutes, so it was much better from that point of view. And my mother took out the house. We gave it to her. It was only cost $9,750 to start. It was almost, a big hunk was paid off already. And we paid off the rest of it. And away we went. And she took it.
And you rented it in Compton?
Rented in Compton. We moved in. We had a washer dryer. And I had connected up these two faucets. And they had, you could put on the hose for the bottom part of the faucet coming up to down to. But I hadn't noticed that there was also an opening for other hoses sticking straight out, pointing straight out. And the spigots were above those. So I shut off the water from the whole building, 8 units. And ran back out, and then I said, I'm running back down and turning the water, and you tell me if anything's wrong. And I was sitting at the front of the building, and Mary's way at the back of it. And I heard, she was being hit right in midriff by two streams of water wide open. Almost blew her out of the apartment onto the back porch. And I realized in that split second what was happening, that I'd screwed up, and I turned the water off of the whole building again and ran up there, and there was 4 inches of water in the place. Mary never got over that.
Oh, yeah.
But we laughed about that a lot.
Yeah. Mr. Handyman.
Yeah, there was
your reputation all day.
And, the big gag was, Or he was an automobile maker.
Yeah. So you worked, you're working for GM in the in what division at this time? Were you working for GM?
Yeah, Buick Oldsmobile Pontiac division.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we talked about that earlier. You lost your job there in 57?
57. Mm-hmm.
What, was there a slump?
Yeah, it was the 55-56. It was in 56 we lost the job, in October or November. It was just 2 years that I was there. And a slump hit. They had been going, we'd been going wide open with the, you know, the 55, 56, 57 models were the best damn Chevys and Pontiacs and Buicks and Oldsmobiles made for a long time. They were really successful cars.
I had a 1956 Rocket 88.
Oh, they were a great car. Good V8. And Buicks were like Sherman tanks, but they were like driving in your own living room, you know. And sat there like on a sofa. But the slump came in 57, so I think that they made only about 70% of what they made the year before. And it was such a slump. So they laid us all off. I was called back on the basis of seniority, but we were already in Northern California when the callback came. Now we had a job painting up there. The friends of mine who were still painting.
So when you, while you were laid off, right away you got a job painting?
Right now. Well, this was, politics was affecting this. One of the reasons why I went back into a really active job situation, where I knew even though I had to shut up, there was a lot to be learned. And there was a wildcat strike the week I was hired against Luther's contracts. But I had come down here in 1951 to be the organizer for the Workers' Party branch here, the ISL branch, Independent Socialist League. And under the pressures of McCarthyism, our people were distancing themselves from identification with any kind of activity. And I went in sort of as an escape from just doing nothing, going into hibernation. And there was nothing holding me here anymore. After 2 years in that plant, the party was no hold on me anymore. And I didn't want to come here in the first place. That was an assignment to come down here. I like the Bay Area. That's where I felt at home. To be standing on the water on the Embarcadero on a sunny day, talking with friends, drinking coffee with friends, was my idea of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And things were switching. My idea of happiness had to be at home, you know. But I needed those friends from Maritime.
So when you moved up to San Francisco, where did you move?
We had a friend who was a socialist. He was rather famous in the Bay Area. Arlene Slaughter, who finally owned the Central Realty Company. She broke more blocks, integrated more segments of the East Bay than any other single person. It was a big agency, about 30 agents in her agency. Natural organizer. Natural. And an extremely active and good party person in her industrial business. She was a shipyard worker.
Unusual for a real estate person.
Well, like, one thing a woman teaches you is how to organize an operation. And boy, she knew how, and she was good, and she was personable, and she was good looking, marvelous personality. And she got us a house in Oakland Hills that was temporarily empty. And then she got us another house in Albany that just, well, we lived there while it's being sold. Mm-hmm. It's still better.
Mm-hmm. like dirt cheap rent, right?
Yeah, cheap rent. And then we bought a house, a 7-bedroom house in Oakland.
Did she find you that house? 7-bedroom?
Yeah, for $10,000. $1,000 down.
What year was this?
1956. Latter 56, almost 57. And, God, I worked every weekend of my life for the next 2 years fixing that up.
Mm-hmm.
And when we left there, we sold out the Clinton Jinx, the Clint Jinx case. He was mine known smelter workers. He's in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
As the blonde organizer in,
right.
I
know the movie.
Salt of the Earth.
Salt of the Earth, right. Yeah.